halfway through the month yet. But I'm delighted to say that we are ready and set now to be joined by our guest for today. He's a man who we always enjoy chatting about the Bundesliga with, all German football, all expert indeed. Joining me all the way from Germany right now, it's Mr. Kit Holden. Kit, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show, mate. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, mate. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. All the better for hearing your voice on our airwaves once again, mate. Before we go ahead and look ahead to the Bundesliga weekend coming up, let's take a look back at the Champions League action, and in particular Borussia Dortmund, beaten by an English team on home soil, so to speak, and a pretty tough loss for Dortmund to take.
Yeah, well, I mean, you say that. I mean, it's tough mathematically, because obviously it puts them in the weakest position in that group, with the exception of Marseille. And, you know, that's now sort of basically on the knockout stage already for them. They've got to win their last two games now, which they're perfectly capable of doing. But that's the thing. There's enough self-confidence there. And actually, the reaction to the defeat wasn't... I mean, I was obviously disappointed, and they're annoyed to have lost the game. They pretty much dominated. I mean, they got 11 shots on goal without scoring. And, you know, it was quite like the first leg of the game, the tie, when the better team actually was probably the team that lost. But for Dortmund, yeah, after that game, it was quite a surprisingly positive reaction. Everyone sort of seemed to come out and say, oh, well, at least we outplayed them, and at least, you know, we know that we're on their level, and now we can still get through and win our last two games. So even though there's obviously a lot more pressure on them now, they seem to be taking it on the chin quite well. How much of that is just sort of usual Dortmund PR, and how much is true is yet to be seen. But I think, they've certainly got the quality to get through. Whether they've got the mentality from this position, which perhaps is a bit alien to them, we'll see against Napoli.
We saw right at the very end of that game, Lewandowski had a tug on his shoulder as he went for the spectacular bicycle kick and went down. Has much been made of that? Because there's been a number of decisions elsewhere in the Champions League that have been very similar to that call and have gone sides way and been given free kicks and penalties in games. Yet Dortmund didn't get the luck of the draw really with that.
No, but I think I haven't seen a great deal about that. I think, you know, with a game like this, again, from Dortmund's side as well, the reaction has tended to be more that Dortmund wasted their chances. And you know, you can't put it down to a refereeing decision or one moment. When you have that many more shots on goal than your opponent and you still lose 1-0, then it's rather your fault. And it's quite a kind of refreshing honesty in that reaction. And also perhaps a little bit of self-deception, because if you lose a game, you lost a game. But it's an interesting place to win. But I haven't seen too much complaints about the Lewandowski incident.
I'm sure if that was in England, there would have been continuous reports throughout the press about it. But Germany staying ever focused and vigilant as always. And Schalke with a pretty tough task in the Champions League. They're suddenly back in the thick of that group in Group E. And a tough loss at Chelsea. And I'll tell you what, they really did kind of kick themselves in the foot with Hildebrand and that first goal for Eto'o.
Yeah, well, I mean, Timo Hildebrand has long been a cause of sort of controversy and discussion at Schalke, and immediately after that game, he sort of said, oh, yeah, you're going to get them back again at a press conference, and was moaning about the press, and then immediately after that, Bild ran a story about whether Ron Robert Seeler or a few other keepers were named as possible replacements for Hildebrand in January. And it sparked that entire debate again as to whether Hildebrand is actually good enough to be Schalke's number one, which I think is definitely over-exaggerated. I don't rate him as a world-class keeper, but I think, you know, one of the problems with Schalke over the last years is they never had a proper number one, and the fact that Jens Keller has sort of decided on him is certainly a step forward. Keepers do make mistakes. That one was a particularly bad one. And actually, you're saying about German vigilance, I think Schalke against Chelsea has been just about the antithesis of German vigilance and German concentration, because they've come out both games and started quite well and put a lot of pressure on Chelsea and then just been hit on the counter and capitulated. And there is still that mental problem there at Schalke, whether it's with the coach, like the coach or the squad, or simply maybe the fact that, I mean, they're much stronger in attack than they are in defence in terms of the players they have, the quality they have. But they're certainly very weak on the counter, and they're very, very quick to capitulate mentally.
What do you make of both Weidenfeller and Hildebrand? Because Weidenfeller as well doesn't shower himself in glory too often at Dortmund. He's prone to mistakes. Are these both keepers that are of Champions League quality, in your opinion, Kip?
I think Weidenfeller certainly is. Hildebrandt, there's a question over at Weidenfeller for Dortmund, which to clarify is an absolutely excellent keeper. And if you look at the saves he made in the Champions League final, in any big game, big Bundesliga game, he makes the right saves at the right time. And when he does make mistakes, I mean, you know, sort of charged out his goal against Napoli, and that was an error, but it's you don't see it as often as with some keepers, and they tend to be less sort of, they tend to have fewer or smaller consequences than the sort of important saves that he does make. I mean, he's just been nominated today for the Germany squad for the first time in his life, for the friendlies against Italy and England. So he's obviously, you know, obviously impressing. There's been that debate's been going for years as to whether why Löw keeps ignoring him, even though he's one of the most informed and best goalkeepers in the Bundesliga. Personally, I don't think they should pick him, because I think they should stick with the younger keepers, and Weidenfeller's now missed his chance for good or bad, but he has picked him, and yeah, Weidenfeller might get a run out against Italy or England. And in terms of how he's played at Dortmund over the last few years, I think he has deserved it. I mean, it's, you know, he is one of the best keepers in the Bundesliga, probably the second best in terms of form alone and consistency alone, but that is very much so, I think, linked with how at home he is at the club, and the fact that he's given that responsibility. It's not necessarily that he's technically so much better than any other keeper, but in terms of performance, he's right up there.
In terms of Schalke, just finally on that, on Group E, quickly, Kit, before we move on and talk a bit of Bayern Munich, of course, with the way the fixtures have now lined up for Schalke, do you think it's kind of given them a slightly easier finish? Playing Stahl now, with Chelsea given the opportunity to take points away off Basel before that final game against the Swiss side, is that going to be a little more beneficial than if it was the other way around for them?
Well, I think when people look at that kind of thing, particularly in a Champions League group, you can always sort of take it one way or the other. I'll use a very English example and say, you know, it's like in cricket with batting or bowling first. There's, you know, it depends on the circumstances that go around it. And I think had Schalke not had played so well and got the good results in their first two games, then obviously lost to Chelsea, and they'd be under a lot more pressure. And if they were, you know, facing Chelsea, having dropped points against the smaller teams towards the end, then they'd be, you know, under equal pressure. So I don't even really look at the assembly of fixtures, but certainly they're conversely as well placed as Dortmund, if not better placed to progress, even though they've just lost the two games 3-0 on the bounce. Because yeah, it's a weaker group. You know, you can see Chelsea beating Basel a lot more than you can see one of the three in Dortmund's group pulling away from the rest. So I think, yeah, Schalke will probably be fine, even though they still have, yeah, very, very strong issues in terms of form and in terms of quality.
Now, Bayern Munich, of course, with that 1-0 win in midweek, but it's this weekend where the headlines can really be made for them. A chance at history for Bayern to finally become the longest unbeaten side in Bundesliga history. Would go to 37 games, I think it is, this weekend against Augsburg. How does this team? It's just breaking records again. This Bayern Munich side. Is it going to go down as one of the greatest ever German sides?
Oh, I think so. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens this year, but I think purely on the basis of what they did last year, you can say this is one of the best Bayern sides ever, and the way they play their football is probably the best Bayern side ever. And first Bayern side to win the treble, so I think they're already up there with some of the best Bundesliga sort of lineups that we've ever seen. But in terms of records, what they've done basically is what sort of the old cliche, what you're always supposed to do, and taking one game at a time, and the records just come from that. I mean, it's, you know, Netsley talks about in the same way Hankers used to, that records aren't really an issue for them. The players are slightly more positive until they say, oh, it's nice to get the records nonetheless. I mean, if any team deserves to break that record that Hamburg have, the 37 games, then it's this Bayern side, because, I mean, there's always a lot of sort of controversy at Bayern and moaning at Bayern about how they're not playing football in this way, or they're scraping victories. But the point is they win week in, week out, and they get those points, and they do play good football, even though teams are perhaps learning to defend against them better, and you know, they are at their best a joy to watch. So it's, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think they'll do it. I think they will go down as a great team. I think they'll win more trophies this year. Don't think they'll repeat the treble. I think that's near on impossible, but we shall see. It's an interesting stat about Augsburg, actually, that they have one of the best records in the Allianz Arena of any Bundesliga side. because they've played most of their games there against 1860, but they've won like four of the last eight games in the Allianz Arena. So it could be a bit of a banana skin, but yeah, I think they'll be fine, and they'll another record for the books for Bayern.
Who's the most likely team? Obviously, Dortmund comes to mind when you think of breaking this run, especially with the Bayern-Dortmund game looming on the horizon after the international break. But in terms of style of play, Kit, who do you think has the best style of play to break down a Bayern side tactically?
Well, I think, sort of instinctively you'd say a team perhaps like Hannover who play on the counter-attack and can perhaps hit Bayern if they, win possession in their own third and then sort of very, very strong. I mean, Dortmund play in a similar way, very, very strong from back to front. Very, very quick turnaround in the game, and there's a few teams like that. The Bundesliga, Hannover is the one that springs to mind. And, there are a few teams where you can say, yeah, in theory that would work, but most of those teams don't have the quality to really do that over 90 minutes. And we saw in the last games against Hoffenheim and Mainz, teams can spring attacks on Bayern and score and go 1-0 up, but it doesn't tend to last. Bayern will always wear them down and always exhaust them and always, at the end of the day, generally win. If you go 1-0 up against Bayern, it's almost like, although I never say it's bad to score a goal, but it's almost like you can score too soon, because once you're 1-0 up, you've expended all your energy and Bayern will just wear you down and inevitably get 2 or 3, whereas if you score a late equaliser like Freiburg did early in the season, then you can perhaps nick a point. But it's obviously not that simple. But I think in terms of how to beat Bayern, there is no way. You simply have to count and play your own game and defend and then see what happens. They are that good. They're one of those teams where you simply can't. There is no winning formula, I don't think, or if there is, then it takes not journalists, but a very, very talented coach to work it out.
Dortmund this weekend have a pretty tough task, I guess, against Wolfsburg coming up. It's a Dortmund side, though, that in the league has almost started in the same way that Bayern did last year, aside from that one slip-up, that one loss this year, 31 goals. I mean, do you think they're getting the balance right now between focusing on both Champions League and league performances, or do you think they'll get distracted by one once again, kind of think it?
I think, they tend to find their main competition over the last few years at around this time, around Christmas, around sort of end of autumn, winter, the winter break, because they then have the idea as to where they're going. I mean, 2 years ago it was they were out of the Champions League and they were ahead in the league and they could just put everything into that. And they weren't ahead in the league actually, they were like just behind Bayern, but they put everything into the league and went on that. It was a 21 game unbeaten run where they took the title with that. And then last year it was the other way around. Bayern were already streets ahead by Christmas and Dortmund could just put everything into the Champions League. I think this year is going to be more interesting if they do get through their group, because they'll have an equal shot at both, and that will be new grounds for them. They've never really actually been in that position. So it is actually coming up to the key months, I think, now for Dortmund, where they will have to sort of make that adapt in that way, in a way that they haven't done before, and make that choice as to which holds priority. I think, to be honest, although obviously the Bundesliga is generally seen as sort of the bread and butter and the main trophy, I think there's an element of the romantic in Klopp which might just end up going for the Champions League on the sly. If Bayern pull away by 4 or 5 points, then he might sort of begin to channel his resources into cup football. But yeah, I mean, it's coming up. These next few weeks will be very telling for Dortmund as to how the rest of the season's going to pan out.
And they're taking on a Wolfsburg side that last year were very impressive with Diego, getting a number of people very excited with his play in the heart of the pitch. But Wolfsburg have been pretty much breathing hot and cold week in, week out. 6 wins, 5 losses. Is this Wolfsburg side that's struggling to find any sort of consistency at the moment?
Well, I mean, they've won the last 3 games on the bounce. I think they've actually sort of, rather than it alternating, they've sort of had a very poor start and they've recovered since then. So I think they're fifth in the table, so it's certainly not a bad start. Diego is a huge, huge player for them, and he's out with injury at the moment. He won't be playing against Dortmund. Replacement is Daniel Caligiuri, who's a very good player and impressed a lot at Freiburg last season, but perhaps doesn't have the same, because he's a new player, doesn't have the same psychological effect at Wolfsburg that Diego does. But I think I mean, Wolfsburg, it's always difficult because they are such a kind of, by their own nature of how they build teams, they do it with the money and by signing players. I mean, Kalfalov, the director of sport, is always linked to a few players here and there. At the moment, it's Aaron Hunt, and he's always buying players like Gustavo, who perhaps are fringe players at bigger clubs. So it's very almost artificially assembled team, and that does make consistency a bit of an issue. But I think, you know, and as I say, three wins in a row for them, and they're fifth in the table. I think they'll be very happy where they are.
And just finally, Kit, before we let you go, the ever kind of changing times of Hamburg last year, expected to be relegated at the beginning of the season, and then produced a pretty decent season. This year, it's not started so well for them. What do you make of their chances of being able to get away from that relegation battle come the end of the season at this point in time?
I think that'd be absolutely fine. I also think they would have been absolutely fine if they hadn't sacked Torsten Fink. I mean, I think Hamburg is a very unique club because because it's such a big club in its own city, and because the media in that city is so prominent. I mean, it's a massive media city. It is always under focus. It's got a very, very strange board system, whether it's almost like a sort of huge committee where everything can get vetoed very quickly. It's a very bureaucratic system, and as a result, there's always off-field issues at Hamburg, even when it's not actually going that badly on the field. And at the start of pretty much the last three or four seasons, everyone's always said, oh, Hamburg are in a crisis, they're going to go down, because that's the news coming out of Hamburg, because there's always going to be that sort of story. And every year upon year, they've turned it around with a pretty weak squad and a pretty unsettled squad because of all the off-field stuff that goes with playing for Hamburg. So, and, you know, I think they would have been fine even if they kept Fink. They made the decision to get rid of him, which they stuck to, and Van Marwijk is a very good replacement. I think, you know, the players are reacting well to him at the moment. There seems to be a bit more of a system, a bit more kind of solidity in that club now, and I think they'll be absolutely fine.
Hamburg going to be safe and sound then come the end of this year. And Kit, we hope that you stay safe and sound over the weekend and have a cracking one enjoying the football, and that you also get some rest, mate, because Rafa tells me you've been having a crazy week, so I hope you can put your feet up a bit on the weekend, mate.
Thanks very much. Cheers,
cheers for joining us there. Mr. Kit Holden joining us to talk all things German football. A big thanks to him for taking the time out to reach us here on World Football Daily and have a chat about all things Bundesliga, the Big Four. Didn't touch on Leverkusen, who had that 0-0 draw in midweek as well. We will go through the German fixtures a little later on, but Bayern Munich set possibly to break that record of Hamburg from 1982-1983, where they went 36 matches unbeaten, and now Bayern set to break that match 37 against Augsburg in the Bavarian derby this weekend. What a big afternoon that could be for Pep Guardiola, although obviously he'll get a lot of the credit, but really was Jupp Heynckes' side once again. Heynckes blazing that trail for Pep to be successful at Bayern this year. And Kit saying, do you notice that? Saying, oh, I don't think a treble's going to happen. You never know. You just don't know this Bayern squad. There's so much talent running through it. Anything, arguably, is possible. Big thanks there to Kit Holden for joining us here on WFD, talking a little bit of the Bundesliga, the build-up to the weekend, and, of course, a flashback at those results from the Champions League in midweek.